story of the prodigal son. And just remind yourself of that story because it leads into the story we're looking at tonight, the story of the elder brother. Remember, the prodigal son went to his father and said, "Give me the portion of goods that falleth to me that is mine." And once he got it, he went into a far country and wasted his substance with riotous living. While he was there, a great famine came. And when the great famine came, he was in want, and he went and hired himself to a citizen of that country, went out to feed his swine. While he was feeding the swine, he would have eaten the corn husks himself. He was so hungry. And then that verse 17 says, when he came to himself, and I like that verse, he was out of his mind. When he came to himself, he said, "How many of my father's servants have bread enough to spare? And I perish with hunger. I will arise and go to my father and say, 'Father, I have sinned in heaven in thy sight, no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants.'" And while he was yet a far way off, his father saw him, met him, ran out, kissed him, hugged him, welcomed him into the house, said, "Put a ring on his finger, shoes on his feet, a robe on his back, kill the fatted calf, let's make merry. My son was lost, now he's found. He was dead, now he's alive." We come tonight then to verse number 25, and that is the reaction of the elder brother to what happens with the younger brother. And this is such a interesting contrast. The younger brother is the prodigal. He's the one that took his father's living, and he went out and wasted it in riotous living. But here's the elder brother who never left the father's home and stayed in righteous living. So if you measure by the outward appearance of it, the prodigal in riotous living and the elder in righteous living, you would say, well, I know which one is better in the end. And you would be wrong. And that's the point that Jesus is making in this parable. And here's the reason he's making it. Look back at verse number 1. Notice to whom he's speaking. When Jesus gives this parable, of course, he gives the parable of the lost sheep first, then the parable of the lost silver, then this long parable of the lost son with the two parts to it. The other two just have basically a couple of verses, but this one is a long parable. And it says in verse 1, "Then drew near unto him all the publicans and sinners for to hear him." So when Jesus tells this parable, he's conscious of who it is that's listening to him. It's all the publicans and sinners. Who are they? They're the prodigals. They're the ones that are living wickedly. They're the ones that are living ungodly. And so when he told that parable, that part about the prodigal son was all about the publicans and sinners. I don't think they had any problem recognizing that that part of the parable was about them. They knew themselves well enough. They knew they were sinners. They knew they were like the prodigal, children of Israel who were sinners and publicans and out there breaking the law of God. It says, all of the publicans and sinners came to hear him. Now, that I like that word, all. Does that mean every publican sinner that was alive at that time was there? Well, there's two ways. The word all can mean all without exception or all without distinction. When the Bible says all have sinned and come short of the glory of God, that's all without exception. When it says all we like sheep have gone astray, all without exception. But when it says all the publicans and sinners, we call that in English grammar a hyperbole. And that simply means that we're talking in terms to get attention. All the publicans and sinners, without distinction. That means when Jesus was there, every publican and sinner within the sound of his voice paid attention to what he was saying. Now that's good to understand because in our day, you can't get every publican and sinner to pay attention when the preacher's preaching. Some of them fall asleep. Some of them just aren't paying attention. They're thinking about this or that or what's going to happen then or now. But when Jesus was preaching, it's telling us all of the publicans and sinners came to hear because not a one of them stepped out. Not a one of them went aside and didn't want to hear it. They all wanted to hear what Jesus... So it doesn't mean all without exception. It means all without distinction. Every one of them came. Every one of them that were there came. And they listened to Jesus when he spoke. Now verse number 2 says, "And the Pharisees and the scribes were there." And when he saw that they were there in verse 3, "And he spake this parable unto them." So Jesus recognized his crowd. There were the publicans and sinners, and then there were the Pharisees and the scribes. And what were the Pharisees and scribes saying in verse number 2? "This man receiveth sinners and eateth with them." So you know what Jesus did? He told the story of the prodigal son so the publicans and sinners would know. I'm talking about you. But you can come back to God. You can come back to the Father. you can leave your wasted living and riotous living and come back to the Father. Now he's going to talk to the Pharisees when he talks about the elder brother. The publicans and sinners understood it when he was talking about the prodigal. That's us. That's us. Now he's going to talk about the Pharisees. You know what the Pharisees' problem is? They don't even get it when he's talking about them. They're too puffed up. They're too righteous. The riotous understood the message of the gospel. The righteous didn't accept it. They couldn't see themselves in it. So this parable we're looking at tonight, this elder brother, half of it, that's talking about the Pharisees. That's talking about those that don't think that they need it, the self-righteous ones. So let's look tonight at the elder brother. Look at letter A in our outline. Notice, first of all, verse 25 to verse 27, his simple discovery. His simple discovery. And verse number 27 says, "Thy brother is come, and thy father hath killed the fatted calf, because he hath received him safe and sound." I've underlined those words in my Bible, safe and sound. You know, those are some of the King James Bible words that have become part of our standard vocabulary today. Safe and sound. How many times have you heard somebody say that? Well, he got him back safe and sound. You run into somebody sometime when they say that, you can say, "Do you know you're quoting the Bible when you say safe and sound?" They'll have no clue, but that's where that came from. But here the elder brother says this about his younger brother. He says, "The father hath killed the fatted calf because he hath received him safe and sound." He discovers that his brother has returned. Now that's a sad thing. He discovers by the noise in the house that his brother has come back. Let's talk about why that's an unusual thing. Number one, the absence of the elder brother. The absence of the elder brother. Verse 25 tells us, "Now his elder son was in the field." Now first thing we would say is that's commendable, that's good. The older brother is doing what he's supposed to be doing. He's out in the field working, he's laboring. I don't know what he's putting up fences, slopping the hogs, feeding the cow, I don't know what he's doing, but he was out doing what he was supposed to be doing. While that prodigal son had gone to the far country and wasted his father's substance with riotous living, this fellow was doing what he's supposed to be doing. And that is commendable. And again, that's the Pharisees. They were keeping the letter of the law. They were doing what they're supposed to be doing. So this is to them an introduction so they can see themselves in this elder brother. They're not the wicked ones out running around there partying and doing all that. They're back home. They're doing what they're supposed to be doing. Now the absence of the elder brother, though it's good, also tells us something else. The father was fulfilling his responsibilities, was he not? But when his son came back and when he saw him afar off, he saw him. The father, in the midst of his responsibilities, was looking for the return of his son. The brother wasn't. The brother wasn't interested in his brother coming back. The brother wasn't looking for his brother to come back. The brother didn't want his brother to come back. And that was the attitude of the Pharisees. They didn't care about the publicans and sinners. They didn't want them to get right with God. They didn't want them to come back to God. They were busy doing, keeping the letter of the law and doing what they're doing, but they had no concern for the wayward brother. So in his absence, he was not watching. He was not looking. And can I say this? He's the only one that didn't know what was going on. When he comes in from the field, he has to ask one of the servants what's going on. The servant knew. Everybody knew. They're all in the house and they're all rejoicing and they're feasting and they're having a good time. And he's the only one that didn't know what was going on because he's out there by himself doing his own little thing, being righteous before God, and he had no concept of what was going around him. The absence of that elder brother. Number two, the asking of the elder brother in verse 26. "And he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. When he heard the music and the dancing and the sound of joy and rejoicing in the father's house, he had to ask what it meant. He had to go ask a servant." Now that leaves us with this question. Again, he's the only one that doesn't know what's going on. Why? Why didn't one of the servants run out and say, "Hey, your brother's back"? I have a feeling I know why. They knew he didn't want him to come back. They knew he didn't care if he ever came back. They knew his attitude. They knew his demeanor. They knew his disposition. And that was much like the Pharisees. Nobody go out and tell the Pharisees, hey, the publican just got saved. They wouldn't care about that. They were focused on themselves and their own righteousness and had no concern for anybody else. So this elder brother, we meet him when he makes his simple discovery. Letter B here, number two, his sinful displeasure. In verse number 28, his sinful displeasure. And he was angry. He was angry. The elder brother was angry when he found out that his brother had come home from the far country and the father had received him and given him the ring and the robe and the shoes and the fatted calf. The elder brother now is angry. Who's he angry at? I would imagine he's angry about the brother coming home. He didn't want this, but I would say more of his anger was toward the father, because his father had opened the door for his brother to come back. His father had received his wayward brother with open arms. He'd given him the robe and the ring and the shoes and the fatted calf. His anger was toward the father. Number one, under his sinful displeasure, he was scornful. He was scornful. The way he speaks about his brother. Notice in verse number 30, but as soon as this, thy son. You know what the servant told him in verse number 27? He said, behold, thy brother is come. This is his brother. But when he says it to his dad, he doesn't say, my brother. He says, thy son. The scorn, the tone that's in his voice. He's belittling his brother. But as soon as thy son was come, which had devoured thy living with harlots, thou hast killed for him the fatted calf. Scornful toward his brother. You know, if you're out of fellowship with your brother, you're out of fellowship with God. That's what the Bible says. So he was, I don't know who his anger was made toward, but he was out of fellowship with his brother. He was out of sorts with his brother. And that put him out of sorts with his father. When thy son hath returned, thou hast killed for him the fatted calf. His scorn is not just toward his brother. His scorn is toward the father also. 1 John chapter 4, verse 20 says, If a man say, I love God and hateth his brother, he is a liar. For he that loveth not his brother, whom he hath seen, how can he love God whom he hath not seen? If you don't love your brother, you don't love the father. That's the story of the prodigal. And the Lord is trying to get the Pharisees to understand that. In their self-righteousness and their loathing of the publicans and sinners, they're not just breaking their fellowship with them, they're breaking their fellowship with the father. Because if you don't love your brother, you can't say you love God. Not only was he scornful, number two, he was selfish. He was selfish. The return of the prodigal brother made his father happy. As the elder brother, whatever made his father happy, shouldn't that make him happy too? Shouldn't he be happy to see his father happy? But no, he's not. He's angry. He's scornful. Because he's selfish. He doesn't care about whether his dad's happy or not. It interferes with his plan. It interferes with what he had planned out. It interferes with his agenda. So his selfishness is shown in the fact that when his father is rejoicing, he's complaining. He's full of bitterness. He's not interested in the father's will. He's not interested in the father's happiness. He's only interested in his own. He's going to say down there in middle of verse 29, yet thou never gavest me a kid. You never so much as killed a goat for me, and you killed for him the fatted calf. His selfishness. He was scornful. He was selfish. Number three, he was stubborn. He was stubborn. Think about this. The prodigal son had gone to the far country. We talked about that last week. When he came to himself, he said, I shall arise and go to my father. It was in his heart to go to the father. So the prodigal got up and took his footstep and began his walk back to the father, and the father ran and met him and fell on him and kissed him, received him back into his house. What a reunion that was. Well, now notice the reunion of these two boys. In verse number 28, he was angry and would not go. Therefore came his father out. See, in the other story, the story of the prodigal took the first step. He initiated it. He turned back toward the father. This Pharisee, this elder brother wouldn't even walk toward the father. He wouldn't go in when the father invited him to come in. The Bible says that his father came out and entreated him. While the prodigal son, there's just only one, the prodigal son's better than the elder father, the elder son. The elder son never broke laws. The elder son never wasted his father's substance on riotous living. The elder son is the better of the two by outward appearance, but he's a rotten son. He's not interested in his father's happiness. He's not interested in his brother's safety. He's only interested in himself. And when his father and his son are reunited and there's happiness, he's standing outside and won't even so much as come into the house. He'd just stand outside and criticize. Stand outside and find fault. A lot of people do that with the father's house today. They don't come. They just stand out there and point fingers. Stand out there and justify themselves. That's the elder son. His simple discovery, let her be his sinful displeasure, let her see his surly disposition. There's an unusual word, S-U-R-L-Y. Surly, that means downcast. His displeasing disposition. The sins of the prodigal son were flagrant. He wasted his substance in riotous living. The older brother either knew or assumed he'd spent it on harlots. He'd wasted it. His sins were outward. They were flagrant. This son's sins are not flagrant, but they're sins of attitude. Not sins of action, sins of disposition, sins of attitude. How long have you been saved? You've probably taken care of most of the sins of action. Now you're working on the elder brother sins, the sins of attitude. Man, that's a tough battle, isn't it? Isn't that a tough battle? Are there days you just say, why did I react like that? Why did I say it? Nothing sinful. But just we've got that elder brother spirit in us. He had not committed any sin that society would condemn him for. But he was condemned because his sins were inside. Remember what Jesus said to the Pharisees in Matthew chapter 23 when he's raking them over the coals? He said, you clean the outside of the cup and platter, but inside are full of extortion and excess and all manner of wickedness. He said, you're full of dead men's bones. That was this elder brother. Outwardly, he had kept the Father's commandments and done what he's supposed to do. And outwardly, he looked fine. He'd not broken it. But inward, he was worse off than that prodigal son was. Inward, he was dirtier and filthier and more wicked than that other son was. And again, the Lord's contrasting the publicans and sinners with the Pharisees and the scribes and hoping they get the picture. Say, do they get it? Well, we'll find out when we get to the end of the story. His surly disposition, number one, his self-righteousness. His self-righteousness. In verse 29, he says, lo, these many years do I serve thee. I like this next part. Neither transgressed I at any time thy commandments. Now, do you buy that? Do you believe that? Do you believe this boy can say, like the Lord Jesus Christ, I have never sinned? Here's a son in a household that from the day he was born, I have never transgressed any of thy... Now, it should say that you know about, Dad. There's no way he can say, I have never transgressed thy commandments without a little bit of self-righteousness in him. He's never been caught. He's never wasted his substance in riotous living. He's never spent his money on harlots. But I bet you he's done some things that weren't to his father's pleasure and his father just never knew about it. Notice verse 29. Look at the I's, the me's, and the my's in verse 29. There's the attitude of a self-righteous person. And he answering said unto his father, lo, these many years do I serve thee. Neither transgress I at any time thy commandments. And yet thou never gavest me a kid that I might make merry with my friends. See where his focus is? He's self-righteous. Go over a couple chapters. Look at chapter 18. You know this story. The publican and the Pharisee are going up to the temple to pray. Luke 18 and verse 10, two men went up into the temple to pray, the one a Pharisee and the other a publican. Verse 11, the Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, God, I thank thee that I am not as other men are, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this publican. I fast twice in the week. I give tithes of all. I, five times he says, I. That's his prayer. That's why the Bible says in verse number 11, he prayed thus with himself. God wasn't listening. He's self-righteous. He's hooked on I. That's the Pharisee. That's the elder brother in verse 29 of chapter 15. I. He's self-righteous. Number two, under his surly disposition, his secret regrets. In verse 29 says, yet thou never gavest me a kid. You know what that means? That means he had his eye on the Father's resources too. That means he was interested in the Father's stuff just as much as the younger brother was. He had just refrained himself from asking for it ahead of schedule. But he had the same covetousness. He had the same greed. He had the same desire. Thou never gavest me a kid. He had his eyes on his Father's possessions. He just was smart enough or under enough control to keep it in his heart and not let it come out. His secret regrets, thou never gavest me a kid that I might make merry with my friends. Dad, you should be spending, why? You've never spent your money on me. Again, tying to his self-righteousness, his secret regrets. Number three, his sinful resentments. His sinful resentments. In verse number 30, but as soon as this thy son, and we talked about that already, not my brother, but thy son was come, which hath devoured thy living with harlots, thou hast killed for him the fatted calf. You didn't even kill a goat for me. Thou didn't give me a kid, a goat, but you've killed for him the fatted calf. His sinful resentments. The fact that he said thy son instead of my brother. You know what we've got? We've got a prodigal son who is a prodigal in a far country. And we've got an elder brother who is a prodigal in the father's house. They're both prodigal sons. One of them just simply went to the far country and the other one stayed right by. Self-righteous, not interested in the father. Just interested in what in his own little thing and what he does and everything revolving around him. He's just as much a prodigal as the other. The only thing is he never packed his bags and went out to a far country. Everyone in the Father's house now is rejoicing and full of joy, and he's standing outside bitter, standing outside resentful, standing outside, finding fault with everybody that's inside. Not part of the joy and the rejoicing. You know, that's what the elder brother spirit does. It steals your joy. That's what self-righteousness does. It steals your joy. So comparing yourselves, Paul says, those that compare themselves among themselves are not wise. That's the end of that whole competitive spirit thing. The prodigal son came back, and man, he's just glad to be back in the father's house. The father is glad to have him back, but that elder brother, he's the one with the problem. His simple discovery, his sinful displeasure, his surly disposition, number four, letter D, his silent departure. His silent departure, verse 31. Here's the father talking to the son. Son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine. Can you feel the love in the Father's house, even for this elder brother? The father doesn't love the prodigal more than he loves the elder brother. He doesn't love the elder brother more than he loves the prodigal. They're both his children. He loves them both. Even when there's a rift between the elder brother and the prodigal, the father still loves, and he's pleading with him, "Son, thou art ever with me. You've never left me. You've never gone astray. You've never gone to the far country. You've always been right here with me. And all that I have is thine." Remember this about the prodigal. He wasted his inheritance with dry living. He gets no more inheritance. He came back to the father's house, and now he's welcomed as a son, and he's going to be fed and clothed. But his inheritance is gone. This other brother gets everything that the father has now. When the father dies, the prodigal gets nothing. The elder brother gets everything. But he's not satisfied. That's not enough for him. The father, number one, how he was loved. "Son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine." The father loves the prodigal in the far country. The father loves the prodigal in the father's house. He loves them both the same. And isn't it a sad thing that the prodigal in the far country could come back and be reunited with the father. The prodigal in the far country can be reunited with the father, and yet the one right in his own house, right in his own backyard, doesn't get right with the father, at least as far as we know. And that's number two, how he was left. How he was left. We don't know how the story ends. The father is out there with the elder brother, and he's entreating him, he's pleading with him to come into the house. And the story ends, and we don't know what happens. Does he go in the house? Does he refuse to go in the house? It's an open-ended story. You know why that is? Because the Lord is talking to the Pharisees right there, and he's telling them, it's up to you now what you do. He didn't put an ending on the story because it was up to the Pharisees to put the ending on the story. Would they remain self-righteous and aloof? Would they keep pointing at the publicans and sinners and saying they're not worthy, and yet look at us, we're so righteous? As we saw in our Sunday night studies in the gospel, Jesus Christ has come presenting himself to the nation of Israel, presenting himself as their king, and at this time it's open-ended. What will they do? Will they receive him or will they reject him? It's up to them. So this story ends without a conclusion. It leaves the prodigal son outside in the field talking with the father, and the father trying to get him to come into the house. What will the end of the story be? It's up to the Pharisee. It's up to the elder son. And it's up to people today. The story isn't over yet. What will it be? Will you count on your own self-righteousness, the I, the bitterness and the spirit of the elder brother that was so destructive? Or he'd be like the prodigal that, though he went off and wasted his substance and right of living, he came back and was reunited with the father, and in the father's house there's joy and rejoicing. I feel sorry for folks that can't turn their frown upside down. I feel sorry for folks that have that elder brother spirit and just everything is bleh. Everything is fault-finding and nitpicking and negative and bad. God, deliver us. And we've all got that nature in us. We've all got that elder brother spirit. God, deliver us from that. Make us a prodigal. Not that you need to run off to the far country and waste your substance and riotous living, but we need more of the heart of the prodigal than we need the heart of the heart of the elder son. I mean, you look at that story and say, which one would you rather be? Well, we don't want to be stupid and be the prodigal son and run to a far country. But wouldn't you much rather have a heart that was reunited with the father than the heart that was hard and would stand out in the field with the father pleading with him and you just leave him there? That's the story and the contrast between the prodigal son and the elder brother, between the publicans and the sinners, between the Pharisees and the scribes. And the Lord aimed this parable right at them to see what they were going to do. And he left it open at the end to give them an invitation. Let's stand together tonight with our heads bowed and our eyes closed. We went through that fast, but we got done in time. Take this parable tonight in its